Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wealth. I'm Alex Steger, and as ever, I am joined by Ian Wenick, this time not in Scottsdale, but live in New York. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, although I'm out of my usual seat, so this is a big difference for me. The feng shui of our studio is off.
The feng shui is off. Good. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that.
But
you're out of your usual seat because we've got a very special guest in today. Andrew Forsch. And I should have practiced saying your surname
before we started.
Yeah,
right on.
It's an embarrassing little trend here that also with Sam Bojarski that I'm discovering how to say team members' surnames for the first time.
It's only been 4 years, Alex.
Yeah, exactly. You know, live on a sort of recorded medium. Anyway, Andrew, fantastic to have you. You're making your debut not because you haven't been up to par before, but because you've not been in town. You live and work in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, this is my first time up in New York in the newsroom since moving back east. So happy to be here. Very, very pleased to be making my debut. This is great.
Fantastic. Well, great to have you here. And actually, we start, interestingly, coincidentally enough, with a story that you got, which is quite Washington, D.C. based. And this was the shocking's the wrong word, isn't it? But, you know, very exciting news that the Securities and Exchange Commission is offering up to $50,000 for people to resign or retire. And this was a scoop that you got us on Monday. Some other publications wrote later. Tell us first, what's the story, basically?
Yeah, it's a big deal. The SEC, you know, the largest financial regulator in the U.S., is offering longtime employees as much as $50,000 to stop working there, which on its face is a, you know, kind of shocking thing to hear. Now, these are, voluntary separations and voluntary retirements. The offers are kind of split between two buckets that come down from the Office of Personnel Management. One is technically a voluntary separation incentive program. The other, an early retirement program. Employees have been given until the middle of this month, I forget exactly, March 21 maybe, to apply. And if they're approved, they're going to have to separate from the agency by April 4th. So, it's a big deal, and it follows some other government agencies, civil agencies, like the Department of Education and the Social Security Administration, which have also rolled out similar offers to their employees. So, it's a big deal.
Yeah, emails went out about this at the end of last week, we understand, correct?
Friday, correct.
Okay, and by Monday, it was live on CityWire. So there you go, listener, reader, you know where to get the info. I think we've hammered that point enough and settled some petty grievances that we may have with larger media organizations. So we'll leave that there. Okay, Andrew, a couple of quick questions about this, though. So the $50K is higher than some agencies are allowed to offer for such separations, and that's because of a quirk in how the SEC works. Is that correct?
Yeah, basically the reason for the difference is normally there's a cap of $25,000 on these kinds of things, but the SEC is not funded by taxpayer money. The SEC is kind of a unicorn in a lot of ways among government agencies, but yeah, for that reason, they get to make their own rules in terms of buyout amounts and things like that. So they've assigned a 50 grand limit there.
Okay, and look, you mentioned there's been other government agencies, departments that have also been making offers for people to go, and the wider context here is the current or new-ish administration is trying to slim down the size of the government, and there's this department which is led by Elon Musk, the Doge.
Department of Government Efficiency.
So do we think or do we know that this is related to that? It would appear that it would be, but is it such a, is there a clear straight line?
I'm not quite able to say definitively that there is a clear and straight line, but that's what this podcast is kind of for.
Settling scores.
Yeah, it probably is. I mean, there's a bit of a black box in terms of, you know, we don't know exactly who is sending, what communications, what mandates are being sent down from where exactly. But yes, I mean, the president has made it clear that he wants to kind of offer buyouts to basically all federal workers. He's trying to slim the ranks of the federal workforce. And this is certainly fitting with that kind of philosophy. And it is, it may just be an early effort. You see it on the corporate side as well. Buyouts generally can precede an involuntary reduction of force or layoffs if the number of people does not satisfy whatever the staffing kind of requirements are. So, that's
we don't have any idea what they're aiming for. There was nothing in the email that we saw that said how many people they wanted to take this or what size they're trying to get down to.
No, I would be very curious to know. The email that I viewed was kind of an all staff email. So I think this went out to a large number, if not, every SEC employee. I don't know. And there has been no real indication from the SEC or from other reporting or from what sources have told me and from what I've seen. The short answer is I do not know exactly how many people.
Interesting. And let's talk about another thing that we don't know, because that'll be fun. But this is a semi-serious point, which is how this then may affect. If you're an RIA listening to this and you're thinking, well, what does this mean for me? How does this affect what the SEC will look like or what regulation will look like? That's not something we can necessarily say. We don't know where these, reductions will necessarily come. I suppose what we do know from previous reporting by our colleague Sam and others, and as we've discussed on this podcast before, that regardless of staff numbers, people can probably still expect a lighter touch regulator than before.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And now a lighter staff to go along with that. Now, I think President Trump has been pretty clear that he's not just looking to shrink the size of the federal workforce. He's also looking to restructure. So I suppose time will tell what people are kind of moved into what positions, where positions are retained, what teams are kind of grown or nurtured, and what teams are kind of folded entirely. So time will tell. I think, there's already been some kind of signals of certain rules, which we don't necessarily need to get into this week, that RIAs are maybe not going to have to contend with under the new administration. So now the slimmed down staff kind of follows that operating philosophy.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I think, Ian, did you want to swing in on anything else to do with this particular piece of news, or should we move on to our next item?
No, I mean, I think the only thing I would add is that it just kind of illustrates the uncertainty that I think is looming over a lot of DC right now, is that we have this offer there out of the blue, and we don't know what's going to happen next week or even the next couple of days with how this is going to work. And so, if I'm a securities attorney, if I'm the CCO at an RIA, I have no idea what on earth I'd be doing right now.
Yeah, the signal might be, okay, there's going to be less, a lighter touch regulation, but it's a volatile kind of situation that everybody's operating in. So who knows what changes are going to come down next.
Excellent. Okay. So let's pivot now. And thank you, Andrew. Fantastic. Fantastic debut. I think we can all agree. Let's pivot now.
I've had a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. On the way in, you said you weren't a fan of the podcast medium. So.
I'm getting a crash course. It's been fun.
Yeah. Good. Ian, let's talk about a slightly different story this week, which is the story of LPL Financial and its recent filing to raise up to $4 billion. So I suppose we should say, in fairness, we weren't the very first to report this story, but it's a very interesting story. Can you fill us in quickly?
Yeah, so basically what LPL did earlier this week was they filed what is known as an S-3, which is a shelf registration statement. And what an S-3 does is you file that with the SEC, and it gives you the window to use that form anytime the next 3 years to sell securities, whether that's equity or debt securities. And the LPL has indicated that sometime in the next 3 years, it's going to try to raise up to $4 billion. And so the next question that a listener might be asking, perhaps my wife or one of her friends, is, okay, so what is LPL? And then what would they use the money for? So LPL $1.7 trillion in assets, the largest independent broker-dealer in the United States. And they've been particularly inquisitive, and they said in this filing that they may use some of these proceeds to fund M&A in addition to just general corporate purposes and general working capital.
Yeah, I mean, if you just keep asking yourselves questions, there's almost no role for me here whatsoever. We touched on M&A, so they didn't give a lot of detail, but they did mention M&A as one possible thing. Is that an area that they've been particularly active in already?
So it's funny because this was kind of the grand debate that we were having before we started taping, which is how acquisitive is LPL really? And LPL isn't like a Mercer Advisors or a wealth enhancement group where it's making dozens of acquisitions a year. But when LPL does strike, it strikes with fury. That sounds a little bit more dramatic than it actually is. But
it goes big.
Yeah, it goes big. Yeah. So for example, they bought Atria Wealth Solutions, which was another broker-dealer, private equity-backed, that had $100 billion in assets. They bought the wealth management division of Prudential, you know, one of the biggest financial services companies in the U.S. They added about $40 billion in assets through that. And so it's different than pure RE assets because with broker-dealer assets, it's a different model, thinner margins. But LPL is a company that I think takes advantage of its secure position as a large publicly traded company to strike when it finds a transaction that actually can move the needle for them.
And it is a bit of a scale game, isn't it? And we've seen not just LPL and the deals that you mentioned just then, but other rivals, peers, whatever you'd like to call them, similar independent broker dealers, Cetera, Azaic, also been somewhat acquisitive in the last few years too.
Yeah, no, that's correct. And I think the difference is that LPL, I think, is just in a different type of capital position because they have had the successful public exit. I mean, we kind of talk about the multiples around REAs. LPL is currently trading at a trailing 12-month multiple of, I think it was like 24.4 times earnings, which is the last time I checked, which is on par with the strongest valuations that we've seen for REAs. And that's not a perfect one-to-one comparison, but clearly, I mean, LPL has been one of the strongest performing small cap stocks in the entire index the last couple of years. And Cetera, some of these other ones, still looking for that public exit or an ultimate exit to a strategic or maybe another long-term investor. But, you know, I think LPL's position has, it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, a vicious cycle, if you will.
Or a virtuous cycle.
Positive feedback loop.
Got it. Okay. So not tons of detail on what they might do with this money, but I suppose one other thing to note, this is one of the sort of, we could say, one of the first significant actions under its new-ish CEO, Rich Steinmeier. So he took over back end of last year?
Yes, October of 2024. And so Rich Steinmeier
was... Any interesting circumstances around his ascension to that role that we can remember?
No, nothing at all. But no, for context, for people who don't understand the sarcasm, Rich Steinmeier was formerly LPL's top recruiter, and he was named the chief executive in October 2024 after the previous longtime CEO, Dan Arnold, was suddenly fired for a conduct violation. And perhaps what led to that termination will be the subject of a future podcast one day, but...
But not today.
Not today.
Okay, got it. So he took over, fall of last year, and this is one of the first big things he's done since then.
Yeah, this is one of the first big things he's done. He had his first earnings call relatively recently. I believe that Andrew was listening to that one. They introduced a new program back in February where advisors who put their assets on LPL's corporate RIA and are affiliated with LPL's corporate RIA can custody those assets with a third-party custodian like a Charles Schwab. So under Steinmeier, they're working with different affiliation models, and now this is the first time they've seriously tried to raise capital underneath them.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, look, I think that covers that really nicely. And so I want to round off with recapping where you were last week and what we learned from it. So regular listeners, or at least listeners of two episodes, will know that last week Ian was in Scottsdale, Arizona for our first CIO summit over there. And beyond enjoying the good weather and indulging in some Padre spring training, work sanctioned, I should add. What did you get from this gathering of RIAs? What maybe could you give us one or two big takeaways that you learned from the time? How many are there? Were like 50 RIAs?
There were about 55 attendees, which was really nice to see. So I think there's two big takeaways, and they kind of go hand in hand with each other. One was that we have this whole spiel where I'll go up on the stage and I'll give people live survey questions, and then we play that awesome Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, ask the audience thing while I wait for the responses to come in.
Yeah.
And I asked...
If you haven't been, and you know, it's the drama is wonderful, you know, and the production is just so.
Yeah, I'm the John Carpenter of the company. So you look at the results. I asked the advisors there, what is the biggest concern they have for the industry in the near future? And the most popular response by a pretty wide margin was private equity investment eroding the quality of service. And I think that this PE investment, a lot of that's been downstream of succession issues and advisors literally not being able to sell out of their equity because the companies have gotten so valuable, so you look for an outside investor. So to that end, we brought in Phoenix local John Fury, M&A advisor and RA consultant at Advisor Growth Strategies, and we had a really good in-depth conversation on what the average RA, by average I mean, you know, not these mega institutionally backed firms, what they can do to survive in an era of scale and consolidation. And we spent a lot of time talking about how you can get young employees equity in a sustainable fashion.
Okay, so that's really interesting because obviously, you know, look, headlines often revolve around deals. Deals have for the last few years broadly been backed by this wave of PE money coming into the RIA space. But obviously, look, most firms still aren't PE backed. And if you are that smaller tens, hundreds of millions type RIA, and you're going up against these multi-billion dollar firms, that is tough. But John's message was one of hope.
Yeah, I think so. He took a fairly optimistic tone because he works with firms like that on a daily basis pretty much.
That's really interesting. And the interesting point as well, I think, around that concern about the impact on service and the impact on the client of this money coming. What the theory there just being, obviously, those new owners want to squeeze efficiencies. And what they're most interested in is that over, you know, what the end client gets. Is that a sort of fair summation?
Yeah, I think that's fair. 100%.
Okay. Do we share that? Do we have any anecdotal evidence ourselves that sort of is something that's happening or...
Yeah, I mean, I think an interesting example that I always think of is Moneta Group, which is one of the biggest firms out there that is wholly employee-owned. And John and I talked about this too, is that Moneta has a situation where the equity gets rebalanced every single year. So if you're an advisor, you want to keep your equity or get more equity, you're incentivized to bring in more new business. And you can't just sit on your laurels, because if you do, your equity is going to be forced redistributed away from you.
Wow, interesting. Okay, good. Andrew, anything else you wanted to add before you jet back to DC on the Amtrak?
No, I think you know, it's been a from what I can gather about Scottsdale, I wasn't there myself, but from what I can gather, it's a really great start to the year. And this will be a big year for our events team as well. A bunch of new cities where we're doing CIO summits. So hopefully Nashville in May goes as well as Scottsdale did for UE. And so, yeah.
Are you hosting that one?
I am. Yeah, I'll be chairing that one. So, dear listener, if you have any interest in coming to Nashville, we'll see you there.
Giddy up and get to Nashville.
Exactly right.
So, bring
your cowboy boots. Yeah,
yeah, so. There you go. Excellent. Well, look, on that note, thank you very much indeed, Andrew, and of course, Ian, and indeed you, listener. And we will be back with another episode of This Week in Wealth next week.